Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We're wrapping up winter wheat harvest in most areas of the country, or it's already finished, which is the case certainly in the middle and southern parts of the country.
Looking at the progress of the harvest, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
92% of the U.S. winter wheat harvested by August 13th, right on par with the five-year average, 3 points ahead of last year's number. There's only three states where we have not reached the 90% mark on winter wheat harvest progress. Of course, they're all in the north. Idaho, the only state not to reach the halfway mark, 49% harvested on the 13th of August. 55% there is the five-year average. Then we have two other states at 70% harvested, those being Montana and Washington State, but both of those states actually ahead of their five-year average numbers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think it's already making a difference.
Speaking at the Aspen Institute's program on building a more resilient U.S. economy, former Ohio Senator and former U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman on artificial intelligence.
I mean, I think it's already making a difference in industry, some more than others. And as you say, we're the financial industry might benefit from more quickly. The manufacturing sector is catching up. A company shared with me that they're using AI for internal skills placement. So, you know, you've got a company of tens of thousands of people and you're trying to get the right person in the right job at the right time, and you've got an HR department to do that. AI gives you this enormous advantage to be able to, you know, come up with a database about all of you and figure out who should be where and when. You shouldn't be sitting there. You should be sitting over here. And that's incredibly efficient. And it's about helping people achieve their human potential. So I think it's already happening. And I think that's one reason you see this resilience in the economy that, frankly, has left a lot of economists scratching their head. I will say half the economists who were at this event last year, because I was there, you know, were very concerned about inflation, understandably, and talking about what was going to happen. And I don't think any of them would have said it wasn't more likely than not that we would be in a recession right now, or by now that we would have experienced one. So I think it's already making a difference. Now, I do think it's a great example we talked about earlier, where the private sector, this wasn't government, this was the private sector, you know, being innovative. And we heard from some of those people the last couple of days. What I think we haven't talked about as much today is, you know, sort of the potential downsides and what is the role of government. And government has to be careful not to stifle this, and we're in an international competition. We talked about China earlier, but that's certainly true. But think about it in another way. If there's nobody sort of auditing it, it could both kind of go out of control and have, you know, negative impacts on our economy ultimately and on individuals.
But not everything can be accomplished through artificial intelligence. Adina Friedman is CEO of the NASDAQ.
There are a lot of groups, so the Business Roundtable being one, and other groups that are very engaged with the government to try to look at the immigration policy and put it into buckets, right? So I have actually engaged with policymakers and legislators on this topic, and it is very frustrating, to be honest with you, because they tend to want to try to come up with some big grand agreement that addresses every element of immigration reform. And as a result, of course, then the partisan politics come in and it makes it impossible. Whereas I agree, when it comes to high-skilled workers or high-skilled students and the need for us to continue to compete on the global scale in terms of advancing our technology and our and industry and our capabilities, we have an amazing number of students from around the world who want to come here and work here. And instead, to the extent they are able to come, and I think they are starting to be able to come again after COVID, they're sent home after they finish. And so they're basically sent back to their home country to compete with us, as opposed to being able to bring them here and have them be part of the American dream. So we care deeply about it. There's a lot of business coalitions who go and talk to government officials about this. I keep asking, and every time I talk to them, I say, so what's the chance of some sort of immigration reform before the next election? And unfortunately, you get, on both sides, they say, well, we'd love to be able to do it, but, and then you end up hearing their partisan reasons as to why it's difficult. So it is frustrating. I agree with you. I wish I could answer. And it's intimate. I mean, it's incredibly solvable.
Yeah.
It's just, the question is if there's a will, there's a way. And unfortunately, the will isn't there right now.
And this is Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I want to just talk a little bit about our process.
Former North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp on work from the Bipartisan Policy Center's Carbon Solution Task Force.
We started out, Saxby and I did, by saying, boy, have things changed. You know, when we were in the Senate, if you had talked about climate and farmers and rural America in the same sentence, you might have been drummed out of the room. The attitudes of rural America and farmers have really changed as they have seen the consequences of climate, but also as they see the opportunity of growing to a global market, growing for and selling to a global market and what that means. And so we were very convinced that the time was right for us to begin this process. I want to just report what a soybean farmer said to me in North Dakota when I asked him about climate. He said, I expect that we are going to have to be able to prove sustainability and climate sensitivity for the commodities that we sell into the global market in the future. Let's get going. The next step that we took was evaluate where we are. And I really have to give a shout out to the great staff at BPC. They did a great job in evaluating what that looks like. Second, I want to reiterate kind of the goals. Do no harm. Let's keep the programs that are working for us. Make it economically important and viable to adapt some of these challenges. And let's make sure that we don't leave behind something that hasn't been said here. The early adapters. I'm always sensitive to people who, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. You know, where's my benefit? You're trying to promote change in other producers. Do I get a benefit from change? And so we basically came up with a list of, when you look at it, six themes. And I want to focus on two because I don't have a lot of time left. The first one is workforce. You have all the data in the world, but if you don't have somebody ready to engage with farmers and ranchers on the ground, in the field, telling them, you know, look what your neighbor did over here. How are we going to kind of help you understand how these programs work? And so, you know, you can design all these programs, you can have all the pilot programs in the world, but if you don't have an implementation strategy for those programs, this won't work. And so that's why it's so important that we educate that next generation of farmers. The second thing I want to highlight is carbon markets. And I know that hasn't always been a subject of consensus on your committee, but I want to just relay some of the things that we heard. People who are going to buy into carbon markets, they want certainty. They want to know that they're not buying something that just simply is not, I wouldn't say junk, but they're buying something that actually has a climate impact. They have reputational risk if they don't. And as they talk about their own kind of carbon sensitivity, they want to make sure that they're getting the bang for the buck and the environment's getting the bang for the buck. And so that's why a lot of the research and a lot of the work that's being done by the committee to kind of evaluate how do we give it the good housekeeping seal of approval, if I can use those words. And I know that Secretary of Agriculture is very engaged, and certainly the Growing Climate Solutions Act would task the secretary with that. I think it's important that that work start as soon as possible, because that's where we're going to see a huge benefit, economic benefit for our ag producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I have the honor of being able to be speaker in this House. It's not an easy job to win, as you saw. But
speaking earlier this year, Bakersfield, California representative and Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy.
We want to make sure we do the right things. We've got a farm bill up once every 5 years. There's a lot of different concerns when it comes, especially out here with specialty crops and others. Making the investment in R&D, making sure diseases don't come, MAP, and making sure we invest to broaden our ability to sell further places. Before you is not a bunch of Republican members from Congress. Before you is a bipartisan group of congressional members who are here to use their ears. It'll never get you in trouble by using your ears. And I hope you realize this is our very first in this new Congress where we have come to listen to you, about how we go about not just the farm bill, but dealing with agriculture for the future. As I always love to say, agriculture takes the tradition of the past but applies it to a changing future. Just a few hours before, we watched people win the top 10 awards. Somebody from Israel. I mean, they're talking about drones. We realize competition makes it tougher, but we also realize if America's given a level playing field, we can compete anywhere and we can win. Our products are better. Our opportunities are greater. But yeah, we care about our essentials. We need water to be able to make it happen. But at the same time, we need fair trade. We need the ability to be able to grow. We need to get in front of diseases as well. And so that's why this is today so important. And I want to thank each and every member, because some traveled from across the country, but some traveled from different parts of California because they care about agriculture and they want to know directly from you. And you're not going to learn any place better about agriculture than right here at the Ag Farm Show, right here in Tulare, the number one in the world. We take great pride in that. And we appreciate you taking the time to participate as well. So it's not my place to talk. It's my place to listen. I'm going to turn it back over to GT. And I thank you for being a part of this and really showing your leadership. And this is the last thing I will tell you. When I was whip, a farm bill was the hardest bill to pass. And so I believe we're starting on the right take with GT as the chairman, but also in a bipartisan way, making sure all voices are heard. So thank you very much.
What needs to be in that bill? President of the American Farm Bureau Federation, Zippy Duvall.
Farm Bureau supports the following principles to guide development of programs in the next farm bill. We want to increase the baseline funding commitments on farm programs. We want to maintain a unified farm bill that includes nutrition programs and farm programs together. And we want to prioritize the funding for risk management tools which include both federal crop insurance and commodity programs. The 2023 Farm Bill presents an important opportunity for lawmakers to rise above partisanship. I urge you to work together again to pass legislation that protects the food security for all Americans and ensures the future access for our farmers and ranchers. Farm Bill will stand against the threat of long-term resiliency of our rural communities. For your part, Congress must protect American agriculture and modern production practices from undue burdens. Farmers and ranchers are the highest and most trusted profession in America. I ask Congress to trust farmers and ranchers, too, and to respect the ability to innovate and solve problems.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The latest monthly trade data was issued last week, and, you know, generally what we've been talking about the last few months it continues. Beef exports were down again.
Dr. Daryl Peel is an Oklahoma State livestock economist, talks about the latest for beef exports.
This month we're down about 11% for the whole year. Now, again, that's on top of record levels in 2022. And we sort of anticipated, we have anticipated all year really, that beef exports would probably pull back a little bit from those record levels. You know, we have less beef. Beef production is falling. We have higher prices in general. We've had a relatively strong dollar most of the time. That's a headwind for it. So all of those things kind of are to be expected. Now, I would point out that if you look at, you know, year-to-date beef exports, you know, we're still slightly above the previous five-year average ahead of 2022. So, you know, 2021 back 5 years, we're still above that. So we're not at bad levels of exports, just pulling back a little bit from those record levels a year ago.
Some areas have received rain this year, so are we rebuilding the herd?
We're watching that mid-year cattle inventory report for signs of increased heifer retention. We did not see that. Beef cow slaughter is down so far this year, but it's actually not down enough to suggest that we're really getting serious about herd expansion yet. And so, you know, compared to that that situation a decade ago, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also some key differences. And I think it has to do with the fact that we do have continuing drought in many regions of the country that clearly, if it's not actually contributing to additional liquidation too much, it's certainly preventing those regions from having any possibility of turning around and thinking about stabilizing and expanding cow herds. And so, you know, and some other areas that maybe that have improved a little bit and are maybe not in drought or not in as bad a drought at this point, but they still need some time to heal up. A lot of those pastures are in pretty tough shape and hay supplies are depleted. So I think producers are kind of taking it cautious from that standpoint before they get too aggressive here with any herd rebuilding plans.
But at these prices, why are we not seeing some holding on to heifers?
Producers have been through a lot of stress the last couple of years. High input costs, the drought areas, high hay prices have been a tremendous problem. And so, so some producers, you know, one of the reasons maybe that we haven't seen that evidence of holding heifers yet is just in the short run, producers need to sell heifers into these stronger markets we've got. And generate that cash that's needed for some revenue recovery for some period of time. At some point in time, then I think they'll think about holding heifers, but right now maybe they need to sell them.
One large area of uncertainty is the cost of production. And Pill explains,
we still got a fairly high cost production environment. Now, for producers in areas that use a lot of fertilizer, chemicals, and so on, some of those prices have moderated from the record levels last year. But overall, the overall cost of production is still relatively high. And I think producers, again, are somewhat wary that we can see this thing turn around. There's still a fair amount of uncertainty in some of these global markets that can affect those input supply chains as well. So producers are taking it a little easy. And one big key difference from a decade ago in terms of starting herd rebuilding is the fact that we're in a very different environment now with interest rates. We're in substantially higher interest rates. That's going to affect cost of production, cost of financing. Producers that need to purchase, heifers or cows to rebuild their herds will face a lot different situation relative to the financial implications of those decisions.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Daryl Peel. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Formed 2 years ago, FACA breaks down the barriers that have existed between farm organizations and environmental groups on the issue of climate and gives producers a seat at the table in climate discussions.
Chuck Connor is a former Deputy Secretary of Ag, now CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives.
We believe that policy should be voluntary and that market and incentive based, that they should advance science-based solutions and outcomes, and that they should promote resiliency and help rural economies better adapt to climate change.
So how should the Farm Bill address climate issues?
First, we believe that USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service must be bolstered to effectively meet and address climate. FACA recommends a 10 to 20% increase in funding for NRCS programs to be dedicated for new and existing greenhouse gas reductions, adaptation, and soil health efforts. We also support setting aside 1% of total mandatory funding from the new baseline for technical assistance to ensure producers receive critical on-the-ground support. Second, FACA recognizes that climate smart agriculture requires reliable broadband. Without such a connection, many of the tools required to implement and measure best practices are simply out of reach of producers. We applaud Congress's efforts on broadband thus far. However, the need is great across the countryside, and many, many gaps remain. FACA hopes that this continues to be an area of focus in the Farm Bill process. Third, FACA has several recommendations on energy efficiency that could be included in the next Farm Bill. For example, the Rural Energy for America program, or REAP, helps producers and rural small businesses install renewable energy systems and improve energy efficiency. Since this program is oversubscribed, we urge the committee to increase funding to meet demand. In addition, expanding REAP's eligible entities to include farmer co-ops would facilitate wider adoption of renewable energy technology, such as anaerobic digesters. FACA also supports programs already underway at USDA to address climate. I would like to give special mention to USDA's newly launched Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities. FACA is especially pleased to see the program structured consistent with our recommendations for climate pilot projects. FACA's original policy recommendations were developed in 2020. They were not written with a farm bill in mind. In addition, the membership of FACA has grown considerably, both in numbers and diversity, since that time. Because of this, FACA will soon start a process to update our own priorities for the upcoming Farm Bill to build upon the scope of our original recommendations. We look forward to working very, very closely with this committee in this process. Finally, as the Farm Bill process begins, I believe it is critical that any efforts to address climate must provide access for all producers and rural communities and address the historic inequalities that have been seen in many federal farm programs. In conclusion, FACA believes that the next Farm Bill must be written to address climate policy, responding to consumer demands. Private sector commitments to reduce emissions and grow green energy will only continue in the years ahead. The potential for added costs to be pushed down to producers makes it imperative that the next Farm Bill provide the tools to help producers remain profitable. With the right public policy, what could be an unsustainable cost, we believe, can be turned into something that will boost farm income and help rural communities.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Why is the transportation so important? It's because there's virtually nothing produced in agriculture or forest products in this country that cannot be sourced somewhere else in the world.
Peter Friedman is the executive director of the Agricultural Transport Coalition.
If we aren't able to deliver it affordably and dependably to our foreign customers, those foreign customers have other places to go. They will find substitutes, and in the past they have done so. And when they do so, it is very difficult for us, the U.S. agriculture, to get those markets back again. And there's plenty of stories in cotton and soybean and almonds and walnuts and so forth about lost foreign markets because our transportation did not facilitate the flow of affordable, dependable supply.
He says he knows how policy can affect transportation flow.
Federal and state policies can facilitate the flow of commerce, agriculture exports, or they can hinder it. And so I'd like to highlight a couple of those. Now, first, I want to go back to the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, because it's still very much in play. You all passed the legislation last year, but now the Federal Maritime Commission has to implement it. And those entities that were opposed to this legislation, fortunately unsuccessfully, overwhelmingly defeated, are now trying to undo some of those reforms at the Federal Maritime Commission as it goes through the rulemaking process. Fortunately, the Federal Maritime Commission has five commissioners, Republicans and Democrats, that are 100% aligned and on board with the interests of agriculture exports, as well as importers, exporters, all the American interests. But still, the rulemaking process is sometimes provide some access for those who would oppose the legislation to achieve their goals down there. So we really do need this committee and this Congress to continue to monitor what goes on down there.
So who does ag rely on?
Let me just tell you one of the things it did. The ocean carriers, foreign ocean carriers, and there are only 10 of them in the world, we're dependent on 10 ocean carriers, all foreign companies, to get all our agriculture products out and the inputs that much of agriculture needs into the country. They have now invested millions of dollars, which they made over the last 2 years, in upgrading all their systems, and it's already provided some evidence. We've seen evidence of that improvement.
At the end of the day, however, there remains one major issue, labor.
We need more truck drivers, and there's legislation and pilot projects underway to get more people, young people, when they graduate from high school, maybe they want to go into truck driving. They can't now. This will facilitate that. We need more of that. We do need a resolution of the port longshore labor dispute and the contract negotiations on the West Coast. That's been going too long, and we're hopeful, and maybe oversight from this committee will help, because it's causing a shift in transportation services from the West Coast to the East and Gulf Coast. We do need inland rail depots and really can use your help there because agriculture needs more of those.
Peter Friedman with the Ag Transport Coalition. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Cooler and wetter. That was the kind of weather farmers, or many of them in the heartland, had last week.
And that led to some significant rises in crop conditions for corn and soybeans.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey for corn now as we start this week.
59% of the crop rated good to excellent on the 13th, only 13% very poor to poor.
2% more corn in the good to excellent category compared to a week ago, 2% less in that poor to very poor pile.
And now, for the first time in quite a while, we have seen this year's condition crossing over and getting better than what we saw this time a year ago.
Meanwhile, for soybeans over this past week,
we saw a phenomenal gain in the condition.
So as we start this week, 59% of the soybeans rated good to excellent, only 12% poor to very poor. Overall, a 7% improvement in 1 week.
That's a testament to soybeans being able to recover.
And there's time for more improvement before harvest. Gary Crawford, Washington.